And welcoming you, dear listeners, here to this Monday edition specifically of the Holiday Reads. And as I promised, yes, we were going to see each other still today. And specifically, even based upon today's particular discussion here on the Holiday Reads, it is potentially, I don't know if it's sort of like poetic in its own particular light and poetic in the sense that an actual crime took place on Saturday, early morning hours specifically for us, and, you know, sort of like late Friday evening for the Western Hemisphere. But the particular indications, obviously, that are coming out from the discussions around what had happened between the United States and Venezuela this past weekend, this past 48-hour window, has been a whirlwind of various particular commentators, explainers, media, politicians weighing in, and specifically either condemning, either citing specific the specific, you know, precedent that had been stated, and the obvious particular reasoning and motivations that have been laid out. Now I'm sounding pretty much like someone that is citing a true crime book or a documentary to you, because that is even coincidentally our discussion for today. Coincidentally in the sense that I planned this since Friday for today's particular discussion, because back on Friday we had the fictional side of things, that being the crime thriller mystery books and genre and authors to look at, which were the Agatha Christies and so forth and so on. And you find yourself technically flowing from a Friday discussion of fiction, planning for a non-fiction, meaning the real-life based events, which are all historic in nature, and literally a world-changing event happens over the weekend, which is defined as international, as an international breach of international law, or an international breach of international law, because at the heart of true crime genre, or of the true crime genre that we've got laid out for today, is specifically this is a real world people who committed real world acts of crime, which are punishable by law in whichever jurisdiction or particular country or territory you find yourself in. So when we take a look specifically at the indications that obviously, you know, are being emitted, I say emit, not omit, that are being emitted from what we've seen so far of this past 48-hour window, with even poor Maduro showing up, you know, to a court hearing. And even the discussion I had yesterday morning about my Sunday morning take, specifically where this is not the first time that the United States have done this to a South American or Latin American country. There was the recent president of Honduras who was, you know, charged with they call it narcotics terrorism. The guy's name is Juan Orlando Hernandez. He was the former president of Honduras. Then there was the very famous Manuel Noriega from Panama, with Noriega specifically, who was positioned there by the Americans. And specifically now we even see, you know, various particular indications coming through from the discussions that are obviously taking place. And you would obviously be asking yourself, but Dwight, I thought this is, we're going to be doing the Holiday Reads. Well, I'm citing all these particular real world events because our discussion today is based upon real world events, real world impacts. Most of them are based specifically about, the true crime murder genre, specifically that this has to do with the very worst of society across the world and its particular impacts that take place on many peoples, wherever you find yourself. Now, we quickly going to take a short break, dear listeners, because after the quick break, we're going to come back and head full swing into today's particular discussion here on The Holiday Reads.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashikeka peno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why?
So we come back, dear listeners, and welcoming you back to the Holiday Reads here on your number one tour talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And this is, yes, you are in my company from 5:30 up and until 7. This is obviously as we are covering the very interesting genre, which has already sort of like got tongues wagging and, you know, various particular people showing their particular insights in terms of, or displaying their insights and understanding and interpretations. I mean, just to let you know, dear listeners, for the events that happened this particular weekend, I've heard now three different motivations. Even though the motivations are clear and simple and straightforward, but two of the three actually correlate with each other. I'll just leave it right there. There's a new academic that I bumped into. Firstly, I didn't want to look at his particular, you know, his particular talks, but now he himself is giving sort of like valuable understanding specifically in terms of how the world works. Specifically about his talk about meritocracy. That's the best that I've ever seen. Because he's an American, lecturer or professor, who gives this wonderful idea that specifically if you try to look at the ideals of meritocracy and specifically if you use the supposed prime example of meritocracy in the world, which is the United States, it's based on a fallacy, meaning it's based on not a truth, not something truthful. So, we get into our talk for today, which is based upon the true crime genre, which gives us the indications in terms of stakeholders, actors, well, not actors like, you know, the professionals. I'm talking about actors being personalities, entities, and institutions that played key roles specifically in various particular historic events. In many cases, they were literally, you know, murder-related events, meaning the most common particular subject matter would be things like murder or the disappearances of people and so on and so forth. Seeing us into this particular genre, for example, we're going to be looking at two particular key takes. The South African one of true crime entity titles and the likes, and the international one. And the international one has got a whole range of particular, you know, subject matter to look at. These obviously ranging from the last days of Marilyn Monroe, the very famous actress herself, because the theory out there was that Marilyn Monroe died from a specific kind of a particular event. Obviously, you know, if you look at things like suicide and the lots, specifically suicide, or accidents, the police still have to investigate to give a conclusive sort of like answer, response to what had transpired. It's not just there for someone to call a doctor to come and, you know, announce or to tell everyone, yes, unfortunately, the person's demise is because of XYZ. The police also have to independently do their part. Actually, not independently, because they will still leverage a medical expert to assist them in said particular clarity or in said particular conclusion that they've got to achieve, or said particular closure that has to be brought to a specific kind of a query, which is an inquiry, by that way, which they would have started or would have initiated. And in many of these particular things, dear listeners, what you've got to cite here is that we're actually looking at interesting specific titles. Now, if you're someone that wants to understand what happened to Marilyn Monroe, sure, you know, it probably gets you to understand, okay, what were her final moments on the fated day specifically of, you know, what had gone wrong for her. Now, the important thing about this is that this book has been firstly, it was written by James Patterson and Imogen Edwards-Jones. Now, James Patterson, for that matter, dear listeners, is someone that writes a lot of mystery, crime, thriller, action thriller, crime thriller, fiction books. I've got like three at home that I got as birthday gifts and Christmas gifts. But I've got like three of them at home, and all of them are basically, you know, they fall within the crime, true crime genre, because James Patterson specifically, you know, his expertise falls in these two particular genres. What you do see here specifically is that the title itself, the book itself, is even labeled as a true crime thriller, primarily because they try to look at a female actress, a woman who was it in the 50s or the 60s, who had changed the movie making industry, the Hollywood industry, the entertainment industry specifically in the United States, and had reverberation specifically in that sector, you know, being seen all across the world at that time. And then obviously to try and understand the demise that she experienced, obviously that very fateful particular day that has been shrouded in mystery, which the two authors obviously are also trying to look at. Now, they cite here that, and just to take an excerpt from the summary, in the months before her death, Madeleine polishes the script for her ultimately unfinished film, which is known as the Something's Got to Give. Now, in the weeks before her death, she drinks champagne on Santa Monica Beach with the last photographer to take a picture of her. And in the days before her death, she's a guest of Frank Sinatra in the celebrity room at the Cal Neva Lodge. Now, in this particular scenario, obviously, there had been other particular developments that had been taking place that obviously these two authors will be citing. For example, that immediately after her meeting with Frank Sinatra, she engages in an argument with specifically one of the Kennedys, who was at the time the U.S. Attorney General, that being Bobby Kennedy, or Robert Kennedy as his other name would be, and his brother-in-law, Peter Lawford. Now, the important thing to cite here, dear listeners, has been that many particular art historians or entertainment historians or film production historians who try to delve into what happened to Marilyn Monroe always try to gain access to specifically the police records and try to understand what has happened obviously there. Now, in many cases, police records obviously would be associated, if there was a trial, then you would know what the police had investigated. Or if it was a open and shut scenario or investigation, in some cases, now apologies for using literally just, you know, not colloquial terms, but a term that is that is pr- pretty synonymous in terms of, you know, the world of crime dramas and the likes, is that to many it seemed that, you know, something had happened, and specifically that Marilyn Monroe was the only responsible adult for what had happened to her. Now, obviously, this particular backdrop provides a different dimension, a possible dimension that had been a dead end in other previous discussions and exploratory scenarios. But obviously, if you're into this kind of a particular discussion, looking into what happened to a famous person, yeah, sure, these particular insights would always try to provide, you know, what was the backdrop of these particular developments. From Marilyn Monroe, we get into a very, very, very recent development. Now, the said recent development, dear listeners, is something that had reverberations also around the world. Reverberations on such a level that you would literally ask yourself, you know, how's this actually possible in the particular aspect that we're obviously, you know, viewing this genre in. Now, what's key to understand here is that literally there was a book that recently came out. I'm now just trying to get it up because it was right here in front of me. Was the recent activity, sort of like the Robin Hood-esque activity that the young man by the name of Luigi Mangione had actually played a role in. Now, what was his role? His role was actually a very pivotal role, because what he did was he attacked with a firearm, with a pistol, and killed the CEO of one of the United States' largest health companies. They call it a health company, or they call it a health insurer. We call it a medical aid here in Southern Africa. And Luigi Mangione obviously he didn't have a book written about him, because obviously this was someone else that decided to go and write a book of the events and of the motivations of what had transpired, specifically of Mangione's actions. Now, the book itself, titled Luigi, The Making and the Meaning, written by John H. Richardson, recently came out. It should be, you know, it's probably by at least half a year, about 6 months or so old. But in many cases, this specific event also had tongues wagging, and it also had a lot of people sitting up going like, oh, these are large private sector corporation executives being attacked. Why? Well, what's the correlation? In many scenarios, it looked like a weird once-off, you know, criminal act, in terms of this young man or this person with a hoodie and a cap walking up and then, you know, ultimately discharging the firearm. I saw the video. If you saw the video, you obviously would know what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about Charlie Kirk, please. I'm talking about, because Charlie Kirk will have his own particular book come out, most definitely. Specifically in the scenario, in terms of, obviously, from what perspective the Charlie Kirk, you know, book would be written from. Either it would be sort of like to look at what his life was like, who he was, or the situation and the events and the court case surrounding his death and the perpetrator that was captured later on. But if you try to view the Charlie Kirk situation with United Health, with the Luigi Mangione situation, is that in Mangione's scenario was that people went and realized, okay, so this is a medical aid CEO who was gunned down, you know, on a street. Was it? Yeah, in New York, because he was in the city of New York for a meeting. He had come to the city for a meeting that was hosted there at the, I think it was the holding company of United Health. And the discussion obviously was that many people were asking the question, why was this man shot? And then, you know, as police were investigating and people were starting to throw their social media particular, what's that term that we heard from the NAMCOR accused, defense lawyer, that the WhatsApp educated lawyers, and then, okay, imagine this now in the sense of, you know, people from Reddit to Instagram to YouTube to what's the other platform that they also comment a lot on, to even include WhatsApp into that, and everyone obviously having a theory in terms of what is the possible motivation. But there was one potential strand or thread of, what was the word that they have? You know, when people have the same particular feeling, the same particular, it's a thread of common association based upon an experience regarding the sector, the health sector in the United States, is that many people sounded out the same particular issues that they have with the United States medical sector, or health sector for that matter. Specifically, it's constantly highlighted in the world that when you look at your country, and you have to look at various sectors and facets of your country in terms of what role the country has to play to make everyday life a burdenless, not burdensome, but burdenless, aspect for the citizens and the people that live in that country, is that things like healthcare and, you know, let's say housing should be scenarios that must be looked after first. Now, obviously, we're in 2026. I almost said 2025. We're in 2026. The picture is not improving in many parts of the world. And no, I'm not talking about fully what it is for Americans, but I always go and look, what's the common thread? What's the common denominator that many people are sounding out with these various developments that are happening? For example, the common thread that happened over the weekend between, to Venezuela and to Maduro was that it was because of Venezuela's oil. Two being a ex-diplomat of the United States, the second being a ex-intelligence officer of the United States, and the third being an academic that works in the United States, all saying the same thing. This was specifically targeting Venezuela because of its oil, and specifically trying to influence something on a grander scale. And specifically that it is trying to deter one or other particular development that is happening in the world. So what is the other development that is happening in the world? I just heard now, on the way here to the studio, that specifically the one motivation is that China was going to build the whole oil infrastructure for Venezuela. Yeah, it was going to be an investment. It was going to be a Belt and Road investment into Venezuela from China's perspective, from China. Because how is it possible that the day before, Maduro can say no, but I had a conversation with Trump and everything was peachy and was rosy and was dandy. And literally just a couple of hours later, this attack happens from Trump. Now, while stating these particular contributions, the Americans, Trump, Hegseth, and Rubio also exposed this particular perspective they all confirmed it was because of Venezuelan oil. Nothing more. There was no aspect of saying it's to spread peace and democracy or to stay. No, it was just to say to get access to Venezuelan oil. The common thread in the bring you now back to the genre, the book of Luigi Mangione, is the common thread that many commentators specifically on social media platforms highlighted. Many of them you could sense if you read these comments that they were Americans. Many of them saying having a child bankrupts the husband and wife. Don't even have a heart operation or don't even have children because the scenario in terms of why America always has these infectious diseases outbreaks currently happening in it, because the latest one happening now in the US is measles. You would come to a country like Namibia where Namibia technically has, we've eradicated measles. We've eradicated polio. We've eradicated, what was the other disease? The other infectious disease. I think it was smallpox or chickenpox, one of the two. And you have the supposed developed country like the United States that has measles outbreaks in multiple cities. Measles, guys. Where many of those particular people were citing, you know what? Going to the doctor to get medication or the first vaccinations for a child, which is usually the polio and the smallpox or the chickenpox vaccines, the same things we got on primary school as kids, because, you know, the child has to get like their first, after growing to a certain amount, like a couple of weeks or a month or something, the child has to then get their next or their first, you know, sort of like collection of vaccinations, obviously to boost the immune of the child. They don't allow these things because one vaccination in the US is hundreds of US dollars. I say hundreds of US dollars so that you can understand just going to get a vaccination for a child would cost you thousands of Namibian dollars in this particular setting. Now, that was the common thread, the common denominator that I cited specifically with the Luigi Mangione shooting, is that even though his parents have money, is that Luigi Mangione was facing a crisis. The crisis being that Luigi Mangione has got implants in his spine, the bottom of his spine, you know, between his, in his lower back. So at the bottom of his spine, he's got implants. These implants are literally steel pegs that helps with back pain. And every year he has to go for a procedure and he needs a specific kind of a painkiller that puts his family or his parents, it cost them, you know, a sweet deal of money in terms of US dollars. And this was the particular pain. Now, the pain, not the pain that he was going through, the pain of, you know, what was oncoming to him, was a scenario that he was going to phase off his parents' medical aid. You know, for those guys that are on their parents' government medical aids, don't worry, I was also there. where if you become 18 or 19, your mother has to write a motivation, specifically a letter, even if you've gone to university, to motivate why your parents, if they are government officials or government workers, why they still would like to keep you on CMS, on the government medical aid scheme. You know, a letter was written motivating to keep the child there specifically for, you know, to keep this dependent there for a specific period of time. And thus, it led to the action that Mangione committed. The shooting on a public, you know, on a site, on a pavement in broad daylight with CCTV obviously looking and recording everything of what Mangione did. And that he had his escape vehicle was literally an electric bicycle, an e-bike, you know. It's probably the most infamous scenario where a new transport technology was literally used in a, you know, a real world negative event being a crime. And Mangione cycled away on this e-bike. And he had hired, obviously, a rental car. And he had stopped at various particular places. And, you know, this is as this national manhunt was ongoing for this CEO murderer. But the authors of the book of Mangione's, of what Mangione did, known as I mentioned, The Making and the Meaning of Luigi, was that the explosion of glee and sympathy for Luigi surprised everyone. But it was also everywhere. Hours after the shooting of the United Healthcare executive, his company put out a message on Facebook saying, "The hearts go out to Brian's family and all who were close to him." People replied with laughing emojis and comments like the one that stated, "No one here is the judge of who deserves to live or die. That's the job of the AI algorithm the insurance company designed to maximize profits on your health." Because there was literally massive fallout on the social media platforms regarding what had happened to the United Health CEO, because many people were stating how they were either, you know, removed from a procedure, were not covered by a procedure, where they thought they were covered and then they were not covered, where they needed this vital, medical procedure or medical assistance. And thus things were happening left, right and center in the background, obviously only in the administrative functions of United Health. And this conversation was one where you literally never saw anyone coming out with, you know, like, a court challenge that sort of like stated, go and find out what is the operating procedure with regarding vetting, checking and measuring what patients or serve or users of this medical aid are covered for specifically. You know, if they're paying an annual charge, what are they covered for? No one came out with these statistics because all you saw was just negative consumer backlash, meaning consumers who used and had negative experience, and no one from United Health saying anything. They just, you know, all they did was just close rank and specifically they just went silent. Even with a congressional hearing, was it a congressional or Senate hearing, trying to understand from the holding company of United Health, you know, why did this action happen? Why did this killing actually occur? Now, if you've never ultimately gone through or been exposed to the actions that actually transpired in the United States back in last year, this would obviously be a very interesting book to help you understand specifically about, because obviously all of this would be already in the public domain, being that the court documents and the other particular literature that had been compiled by the prosecutors and the defense lawyers and the investigations done by the police in terms of understanding why Luigi Mangione did what he did. Now, it helps to also set the particular tone there, because they are sort of like, if you can call it like international particular events that obviously highlighted interesting talking points from there. I want to bring in, or actually throwing in a little bit of an interesting curveball into this discussion, is a South African perspective. Now, this is a title specifically that, obviously, and as I mentioned, all of these are like true crime developments. The one is the book by the name of The Shallow Grave and Other True Crime Stories from the case files of Christian Botha, who was South Africa's foremost private investigator. Now obviously these particular stories in South Africa are case file scenarios that try to look at interesting developments that come through from what the police and even this private investigator were looking into. And this is obviously a short story compilation. Well, not short story in the essence of short story discussions like what we covered back in last week, but more a compilation of various case files in sort of like a bundle. Now, this does put a very interesting perspective on our southern neighbor. I say this because South Africa, just like the United States, has had its own particular run-in with very, 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 very tormented individuals. If you don't know what I'm talking about the serial killers that have been documented in South Africa. South Africa has had, a very serious issue with it. That's also why in the scenario specifically where Namibia potentially had our own serial killer emerging, that being the B1 Butcher. For those of us who don't remember from 2006, no, was it 2005? 2004. South African police were brought in. Homicide police officers and detectives were brought in to assist the Namibian police with that. To be honest, we've not really had such a situation in the country where there's been like occurrences of these particular kinds of severe social, elements popping up and actually committing such heinous crimes, on such a grand scale. I call it a grand scale because, if you have to go look at the definitions that are provided by, you know, international policing agencies about what is or what defines a serial killer in many cases, is that the scenario is if it's more than two or three, according to the FBI, or if it's more, if it's more than two people that this criminal had committed, the person or the criminal gets listed or cited as a serial killer. Now, the frustrating thing is that at any given time in any year, for example, in a country like the United States, they at least have one serial killer that's busy operating. It's a frightening statistic, I know. It's a frightening statistic. But obviously it gets a little bit more frightening specifically if you position said particular statistic in the African context. And even taking it into the consideration of the recent events that have taken place over the past 48 hours, even if it's in what's its name in South America, is that many of the particular sort of like international relations experts, diplomats, former diplomats, and people from the military and intelligence communities in the world, the various commentators who have participated in podcast discussions so far in the past 48 hours have all cited this next particular scenario for 2026, that 2026 will be a tumultuous year. I'll say it again, that 2026 will be a tumultuous year and that there will be a lot of things happening. Now, you're going to ask me, what does that mean for Namibia? I don't know. Really, I don't know. Primarily because we are still, you know, connecting the dots specifically where we left off just before Christmas, you know. But obviously knowing how Namibia is, everything just went on holiday mode on 22 December, and we still obviously know in sight that there's still a bunch of us who are literally still on holiday mode here the 5th of December, 5th of January for that matter. Now, obviously the particular compilation of reads provided by this author. The author itself is Michie Chip and Christian Buerta, obviously being three contributors, specifically with Christian Buerta's own particular handwriting, because he personally signed the particular copy itself. But it looks into, since he was a private investigator of South Africa, it looks into real life mysteries from his own particular notes and his own particular investigations in South Africa, which included a daughter's search for her missing father, a mother's quest for her abducted children, and a father's fight for justice for his murdered son. Now, all of these particular indications would provide exemplary sort of like reading material for anyone who's interested in sort of like closer to home, meaning in an African context or Southern African context, in terms of stories and similar particular developments that obviously would pop up. The interesting thing, when you've got a look at the first three titles that I've just sort of like focused on for today's session of the Holiday Reads, is there is, and I know this is a particular genre that is fascinating, specifically to women out there. I know, guys. It's just, you've got to be careful. I recently, saw the negative impact that, if you consume too much of this particular genre. But I know that it is more absorbable if it's in documentary format, meaning if it's in a, not documentary like documents, but documentary sort of like visual media presentation format, is that it's something that many particular women love to watch. Guys, you would not believe me how many times I've seen, for example, like at home, the TV is on the true crime and the true crime channel specifically on the pay-per-view formats. If you go to YouTube, there are just resources there, channels, and even amateur people who wish to develop their own particular channels by citing court documents and a lot. And it has an interesting sort of like impact on, in terms of the interest value that it generates. I mean, it's probably something that I've never seen in my life before actually dominating even the best, freshest, printed, current edition of a newspaper. I mean, there was a time, guys, I bumped into a bunch of people with my previous career, specifically in the print media. And it was like, it was a Zimbabwean guy, and he'd worked in Tanzania, he'd worked in South Africa, he'd worked in Kenya, he'd worked in, there was another country. And he stressed specifically that he has never seen the print media perform so poorly, specifically in Namibia, in the context of Namibia. And this was a discussion I had in 2018, guys. Just so that you know. Now, was it 2018 or 2017? Had the discussion. It was during a show period. And obviously the company had positioned itself there with a booth at the showgrounds, during the Vintook show period. And these, very interested two gentlemen, actually three gentlemen, they were lecturers, asked this particular question. They've been to every English-speaking African country on the continent where the reading culture is strong, the print industry has a strong base to work from, meaning they've got strong readership numbers, which supports their distribution numbers, which supports their advertising demand or their advertising proposals. But when they came to Namibia and Botswana, it was literally just the opposite direction that these sort of like reading numbers or these statistics or these various metrics just took. the basis on that was why I compare the reading ability between printing media and, for example, true crime books and documentaries and YouTube channels, is that these three guys outperform, for example, what print media wanted to dominate. They wanted to dominate the discussions and the insights and the informative elements regarding events of the day. But these three mediums, which includes a printed medium, all went into explore, research, and bring to light all relevant facts regarding this particular event. This being said, specifically, it obviously does not mean that, you know, the print media platform has not lost its relevance element, primarily being that they just report on the facts of the matter. Nothing more, nothing less. For a set amount of words, meaning there's a word count that has to be obtained, and that's all they can do. Obviously, when it comes to a true crime printed format, a book, an illustration of, or a printed format of the events of the subject matter, the sky's the limit. The same too also for the documentary. The sky's the limit. The various voices that can be explored, the various sources that can be contained. For the printed media, specifically like the informative media elements, there's a limitation on the author and on the particular, let's call them the particular, for how much content can be incorporated into reading material. Specifically being that there's a very funny statistic that always pops up. I've tried to find the statistic as well, but it's one based on for how long do readers actually read news articles. If it's in a printed format or if it's on a digital format, how long do they read? And it was cited specifically that in many cases, people just read the first two paragraphs. And in many other scenarios, if you went to digital media, it was discussion of, you know, they try to look for the summary. They don't actually want to click on the thing, but they look for the summary. And these various particular tendencies, habits, reading habits, obviously are things that makes the sphere for the information space a lot more complex. But for the other space regarding reading for leisure, reading for your own particular needs, which is the leisure component, the competition is a slightly less more spaced out in that scenario. So obviously, citing the particular, you know, sort of like that particular scenario, it does get us into our next particular true crime African perspective. Now, this actually follows the... This is actually like a background story of one of South Africa's current incumbent ministers. I think he's the correspondent minister of sport, because he was here in Namibia recently. This is a book by the name of The Choice. It is a, I don't know if you could call it an autobiography to an extent of the current minister, Gayton McKenzie. Now, the book's name is The Choice, The Gayton McKenzie Story, written by said same name. This is a true story, sort of like reflection about the man who led one of the biggest prisons in the world, specifically a group of prisoners who had risked their lives to catch wardens on film supplying drugs and alcohol, pimping young inmates to older prisoners, and even giving prisoners a loaded pistol to use in an escape. So this is sort of like, you know, Gayton McKenzie giving, and it's a biography, literally it's a biography, but it forms part of the true crime scenario, and it obviously is a particular read that has traveled very far. I mean, you find it on various particular digital outlets, if not in real-world distribution outlets. meaning that if you're interested in this particular genre, sure, looking into the real life experiences of a sitting minister of South Africa, sure. And to be honest, guys, just to share this with you, when I heard that he was a reformed prisoner who became a politician, who is now an active minister in the South African government of national unity, the GNU as it's called, that label, it actually speaks two positives, that specifically that people can have, they can actually improve and change their lives. I mean, we've had, and I'm now slightly going to promote one of my colleagues' weekend shows, the particular interaction that one of our colleagues have here over the weekends, specifically with former inmates in Namibia. And, you know, looking at those particular insights, discussions, the experiences that they had, those particular elements. Now, this obviously can give people hope, in specifically that, you know, everyone has an opportunity to change their life. They do have access to a second chance. They have the opportunity of, you know, changing course, improving themselves and improving their interactions with the broader society. Because there's obviously major stigma on people who were inmates. When I say stigma, specifically, you can always look at, even here in Namibia, when someone hears that someone else was, had done a stint in jail or in prison, there's always this negative reaction. Firstly, it's always there. It's a stigma similar to any of the infectious diseases. It's a stigma similar to, for example, the HIV/AIDS stigma, where people go like, ooh, he was where? He's infected with what? You know, those particular discussions and those particular reactions that anyone can see, that you can even visualize to yourself. The surefire thing, obviously, from what Gayton McKenzie did here with this particular book was obviously Gayton exposed and shed light on things happening in the prison services of South Africa. Now, as I mentioned, dear listeners, this particular genre is an eye-opener. It will ruffle a lot of feathers, not some, a lot of feathers. Because, I mean, in South Africa's context, you know, they've got very big gangs. Organized crime in South Africa is another beast. Even like organized crime in Nigeria's context, which is, you know, usually scamming and you know, terrorism. In South Africa, it's a multitude of things. It's literally, if you think of the United States, you can think, or if Europe, you can think of South Africa. So, this is obviously someone that had, that was exposed to the organized crime that was present in the prison services of South Africa. And ultimately what that speaks to. Now, I'm not a fan of this particular genre, specifically, but if you're gonna look at things, if you're trying to look at things like subject matter, like corruption, the non-transparent behavior around certain particular things, inmate safety, meaning, you know, the safety of prisoners within the confined spaces they find themselves, the overall health, and when I say health, I'm talking about literally health of the prisoner populations and sometimes how they are treated and the particular sort of like situations that are present, the contexts that are applied, the possible power brokers that always exist in prisoner populations, as well as also the associating to the health, also the medical situation in terms of how medical care is dispensed to these populations, which also includes psychosocial support for that matter. Because usually, much of the particular psychosocial support is directed at, across the world, you can go look this up, is usually directed towards inmate populations, meaning psychologists, psychiatrists come and study prisoners because what interests them was specifically the motivations for why they committed the crime that got them arrested, that got them prosecuted and charged and then sent off to the particular, you know, prison or jail to serve their terms. Is usually that the psychiatrists and many of the psychologists come and look into the motivations for certain particular crimes. Assessing violent crimes and assessing the non-violent crimes or trying to look at the various levels of crimes and thus trying to understand, you know, what were the motivations behind this. It sounds very similar to the subject matter that I had for my marketing diploma, consumer buyer behavior, which is literally a category in psychology, which I discovered, where literally psychologists looked at why people made the decisions they made when they went to the shop. Why they chose a blue bag over a red bag, why they decided to buy that specific bread over this bread, what are the underlying specific motivations, is there anything subconscious, does it come from the packaging, so on, so forth. Now, if you're someone who loves who loves biographies, and specifically in this particular lane or field of true crime, obviously this would be up your alley, specifically trying to understand how a former inmate became a minister and what was the experience like for said particular political leader. Getting into our next title is an interesting particular one, which is also a South African, particular scenario, is the book by the name of Fruit of a Poisoned Tree. Now, Fruit of a Poisoned Tree, written by Antony Altbeker, that's the particular author's name. Is technically a term or a legal metaphor or a legal term that is highlighted, but it explores a scenario specifically that comes through in the work that Altbeker produces in this particular work. Now, it follows the events specifically of June 2005, where a young actuary by the name of Fred van der Vijver, and the son of a wealthy Eastern Cape farming family, who's also a son from this wealthy family, was charged with murdering his girlfriend, Inge Lotz, allegedly bludgeoning her with a hammer as she lay on the couch in her lounge. Now, this particular incident speaks volume specifically because we've seen the highly publicized court or trial proceedings of Oscar Pistorius, where the defense was that Oscar thought there were burglars in his house, just for the police or the various particular testimonies being given to the police, witness testimonies of neighbors, being that the residence of Oscar Pistorius is so deep in the gated community compound that it makes it too funny to have a theory that there were burglars who were not seen on the CCTV of the front gate of the compound finding their way specifically to Oscar Pistorius's residence. Similar particular theory that was obviously also highlighted in the highly publicized Henry van Breda murder court case in the Western Cape, where Van Breda was charged and sentenced with the murders of his parents and his youngest brother and the attack on his little sister. And all of this, guess what, guys? all of this. For example, in Van Breda's case, in his case, was that Van Breda wanted to go out the night with his friends, and his father said no. You know, that basic argument that we've all had in our houses when we were teenagers, when we asked you, when you ask your dad says, ah, brah, but you know, you know, there's no money, or your dad just goes like, no, you're not going anywhere tonight. Or you go and ask the dad for, you know, money, and the dad says, no, there's not enough cash flow, my guy, for you to go and chill with your friends. I'm sorry, you'll have to call off your plans with your friends. I know today, specifically in the modern day context, in many scenarios, the people that I know, they give their children allowances, meaning that the children don't bother them for, like, hanging out money. Obviously, I didn't have access to an allowance. But yeah, I mean, that's the picture that happens today. So obviously, when you're looking at this discussion and you're going to ask me, but Dwight, I did not have access to allowance. I know, guys. We would come from the same generation. We would be the, you know, the millennials. Because us, the millennials, we had to deal with $20, $10, you know, allowances. Literally. And that was given to us also just in one, sort of like one time period, in a blue moon aspect or situation, and we were told, deal with it, you know, that's all you're gonna get. That's all wat jy gaan kry. Leef met dit, jy wil jy los. That's all. However, today, obviously, you know, the youngsters, the children, obviously now being taught about elements of independence, elements of, you know, being told, hey, listen, you can make your own decisions. You have your own particular rights. Here's the allowance. Get going. When you look into the story specifically, like this true crime element that was printed back, first published in 2010, of the events that happened in 2005, is that it obviously explores a very, very dark part in human societies that is even found in any country that you think of, is the severe gender-based violence elements that pop up. Oscar Pistorius and, what was her name? Riva Steenkamp, Henry van der Breda. Even though you can cite, okay, Henry, you know, technically is a mass murderer because he killed three people and he severely injured his sister. And then you've obviously got the other particular events that have taken place also in a South African context, is that all, out of all of them, you find severe gender-based violence because it ends with loss of life. It ends with loss of life. All of these obviously have unique particular perspectives. Many of them obviously speak about the, if we can say the wealthy or the affluent communities in South Africa. I mean, the Gayton McKenzie particular book highlights from you from, sort of like a lopsided, you know, being at the bottom of the barrel in society, perspective, and then thus being in jail itself and seeing how severe things are. You know, what the organized crime elements in the incarcerated populations of South Africa actually get up to. And then specifically, what are these elements that, how do they organize themselves? Now, when you've got a look at these various particular titles that I've now just cited to you from a South African perspective, is that all of them speak towards the, you know, the broad-based criminal or crime-induced society that South Africa has to experience on a daily basis. Motivating why I'm saying the crime-induced society is specifically there are various things that happen. Now, remember back to when I said when we look at psychosocial support, in many cases, you hear in many documentaries that you would have seen specifically about true crime, is that they always interview a psychologist or a psychiatrist. But someone that has to, that is critical, that is central to that specific case, that specific investigation. Why? Because it helps to explain, and in many cases, these professionals try to understand why these crimes are committed. Guys, I can read a fictional novel that has too much crime in it or will have too much violence in it. But reading about a real world scenario with real world people, it takes a lot of guts. I'm not talking about, you know, trying to read about the happenings, for example, of, let's say JFK's assassination, you know, that happened in 1960 something, you know, John F. Kennedy's assassination. No, I'm not talking about some aspects of that, because those are obviously, world impacting, globally impacting events that occur, or the, what was it? Let's say the death of Stalin, or, you know, the particular events leading up to a certain scenario, or what was that? The famous stories that circle around the who actually discovered the failed Austrian painter and his wife, the famous German actress, in the specific scenario that they were found in. Now, all of these talking points that I've just cited are world impacting, are globally impacting events. However, when you get to the everyday person, the everyday people, it has a different twist. It just cuts a different direction. And it just, you know, it just has a different way in terms of how it actually, sort of like communicates the element of looking at the event of crime and the everyday persons that are impacted. Now, we'll quickly take a short break, dear listeners, and after the break, we'll come back heading into the sort of like last leg of this afternoon's program, that being the Holiday Reads. We'll be back right after this here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM, and we'll be back to continue after this break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
So we come back, dear listeners, and you are listening to the Holiday Reads here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And obviously you've been in my company. If you've been in my company from 5:30, up until 7. We still have the last particular sort of like leg for this, for today's session to go. And where we ended off was on a few or a couple of South African true crime reads. That if you know where to scratch and if you know where to go and search for them, meaning from your favorite bookstores, here in here across Vintage or in within wherever you find yourself in the country, obviously they surely would be able to sort of like tickle your fancy in terms of the particular interest that you would have in these subjects or in these particular detailed stories. Not narratives, stories. I take you back to the international landscape, specifically taking a look at a interesting discussion of various particular collections. Well, it's actually a collection of various particular events. Now, this particular title's name is The Killer Across the Table, Unlocking the Secrets of Serial Killers and Predators with the FBI's Original Mindhunter. Now, it's a book written by John E. Douglas and Mark Olshaker, or Olshaker. This particular title itself was somewhere, was something that the legendary FBI criminal profiler, who's also a best-selling author and an inspiration for the famous Netflix show known as Mindhunter, delves into the lives and crimes of four of the most disturbing and complex predatory killers, offering never-before-revealed details about his profiling process and the divulging of the strategies used to crack some of the United States' most challenging cases. Now, remember when I told you guys a little bit earlier that specifically when it comes to reading and reading up about, you know, what crimes ails some of the world's biggest countries, you know, around the planet, in many, the biggest negative, if you look at the United States, is that it suffers from a lot of serial killers, or they call them, it's serial killers, school shootings, and campus shootings. But the two sort of like concurrent crimes that they suffer the most from is gun violence and the prevalence of serial killers in their country. Another particular impacting element has been, you know, how does this particular occurrence of this particular crime sort of like manifest itself in the broader discussion of everyday life? Now, remember, we're dealing with true crime, a genre that is impactful, that documents real history or real historical events with real stakeholders. It doesn't position itself as part of a fictional storyline within a real-world context for you to go like, oh, wow, this research looks awesome. This, how the author sort of like packaged the whole storyline together, is a work of art. No. This is facts dictating what had transpired, who is central to the particular discussion, and what are the motivating elements or factors or the background motivations that drives what had transpired. Now, we obviously see such particular discussions being central, because you'll be literally dropped into the world of what the FBI has to deal with. Now, many people obviously would think about, you know, what makes the FBI so special? Well, it's obviously that the FBI is a federal agency of the United States. And obviously, you know, many of their Hollywood productions try to glorify, you know, the work that this particular agency does. And I know at currently today, as of the 5th of January, 2026, United States is not everybody's favorite subject matter to talk about, but for now, guys, we look at the actual work of, you know, of trying to prevent serious criminal elements from, you know, running amok in the broader international societies. Famous, particular, or notorious. Let me rather use the word notorious as being used here in the summary. Entities like Charles Manson, son of Sam Killer, David Berkowitz, and the BTK strangler, known as Dennis Rader, where trained FBI agents and investigators around the world helped educate the country, that being the United States, about these deadly predators and how they operate, has also become a legend in popular culture. Specifically, if you've ever watched the movies The Silence of the Lambs and the hit television series Criminal Minds and Mind Hunter. Because this is obviously as this gentleman, John Douglas, this particular former FBI agent, because he's a special agent, just so you know, he was a former special agent and a criminal profiler, obviously has to delve into the psychology of things. Now, remember I told you a little bit earlier that when you look at the true crime genre book, psychology plays a great role, because you would hear from police interviews and investigations with the perpetrators, criminals, the various particular personalities that they have and the kinds of people they are. Guys, there is nothing more frightening than watching an interview process that the police have. Now, I know much of it I've seen only in documentaries, but to literally see how police officers how they profile individuals, meaning at any one time, they can literally highlight how many people are lying in a particular investigation, in a line of inquiry, or in a line of questioning, or in a process of investigation, or just, trying to follow up on various leads. How many times they meet, various criminals, and you would not believe the kind of character that, or what it does to the character of a lot of these police officers. Specifically, many of them are just regular people, just like you and me. They are married people. They have children. They have responsibilities. They pay taxes. They are voters. They do this. They do that. They also went to university, or they have dreams of continuing certain further professionalization in their career path. But at the heart of the discussion, the exposure that they get to the worst of society, you should hear the discussions. If you ever watch these documentaries, you should hear how these police officers think and how they respond. In many cases, they know that they're dealing with the worst of society, and in many cases, it has a negative impact on them as well. Now, obviously, there are many, many, many books out there that have explored the various particular, the most notorious of criminal minds, from international gangsters like who are from organized crime syndicates, to elements, for example, like famous figures like Al Capone, to the likes of, like mentioned now, Charles Manson, with obviously some TV series being made about some of these serial killers, which is even worse. I mean, I could understand a work of fiction like what's the guy's name? Dexter, which even makes it more weirder. I mean, because that is sort of like merging law enforcement with a serial killer's personality, and thus deciding, hey, why don't we make a criminal pathologist a serial killer as well, a vigilante at night? Yes, literally, if you've never watched the TV series Dexter, you would be freaked out by that. But yeah. Now, the discussion obviously is one also that highlights, brace yourself. If you've never read this particular genre, brace yourself. Obviously, what they put on in documentaries and even on YouTube specifically is a little bit more made safer. However, looking into TV series that have been sort of like dramatized, like the Jeffrey Dahmer one, it's a little bit troubling. Just to let you know, it's a little bit troubling. Even though the actor, himself, you know, tries to live the part, it's always not a comfortable experience, specifically, looking at, you know, what had really transpired. Now, with true crime, dear listeners, it is always, how can I put this? It's an indicator specifically of historic events that had transpired. The positive conclusion that you can, because there are two conclusions that you can derive from every particular true crime read, is that firstly, it happened a while back. Secondly, the police did respond, meaning law enforcement did respond. Thirdly, potentially either one of two things happened. The suspect had been apprehended, had been charged. The correct suspect had been apprehended, had been charged, had been prosecuted, had been gone through the whole process and is locked up far, far away. Or the suspect, you know, something happened to the suspect, but it was the correct suspect and it just, you know, conclude the closure, or the case was closed successfully with, you know, whatever particular reasoning given by the investigating police. However, if you get a scenario like in the Namibian context with the B1 butcher, where we don't know, did the guy die? Did he move away? Did he go somewhere or what? That ultimately brings out a weird sort of like massive question mark position in that case. However, just getting into, just before, you know, we end off on tonight's particular session here on your number one talk radio station, is that when you delve into this particular genre, dear listeners, it's unfortunately a genre only you can experience. I'll say it again. It's unfortunately a genre only you can experience. It is obviously reading. It's not similar to the documentary or the real life, the reality TV shows and programs that you find on pay-per-view TV. These obviously give, you know, accurately researched subject matter to readers who want to understand specifically what the reality is, meaning the factual reality, not the summarized versions coming through from journalists and reporters who attended a court session, have to observe what were some of the proceedings being given and what the arguments were provided by defense and by the prosecution. No. This is after the case had been concluded and after a successful incarceration charge judgment had been, or sentencing judgment had been achieved by the state. On that particular note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end for today's session of the Holiday Reads here on your number one talk radio station. Obviously, we'll see each other during this turbulent particular period in global affairs and in geopolitics. Obviously, we don't know what the next step is. Unfortunately, Cuba has been threatened, Colombia has been threatened, and now Greenland has been threatened, specifically as being the next targets in what is, you know, Donald Trump's sort of like New Year's wish list, specifically of new imperial endeavors. And on that particular note, dear listeners, enjoy the rest of your programming in our company.
Next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on